From the studios of WXXI, this is Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. Meet the Felix Ensemble, a clarinet trio from the Great Batch School of Music at Houghton College. These three professors have played throughout the Southern Tier, and today they're heading north to bring us a program of Brahms and Beethoven with a bit of Brazil. It's the Killer Bees next on WXXI. Welcome to Backstage Pass, which is made possible in part by a gift from Drs. Dawn and Jack Lipson to support performance, innovation, and accessibility of the arts in the Rochester community. Today, we welcome the Felix Ensemble from the Great Batch School of Music at Houghton College. Our clarinetist is Dr. Armenio Susano. Welcome.
Thank you.
And welcoming back into the studio, you've been here before and you're here today, Dr. William Newbro, our pianist.
Yes, delighted to be here.
Great to have you here. And thank also you. Making a return to our studios is the cellist Rintaro Wada. Welcome.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit, Armenio, about the Felix Ensemble. When did you start playing together?
We started playing together this past year as a result of the opportunities we were being invited to perform in, and Rin Wada came up with the option of why not combine the cello, clarinet, and piano, and he even had already a name picked up, and we all loved it and have been doing ever since.
How did you choose the name the Felix Ensemble?
Whenever I play in the chamber music in Olean, we name it this name, actually. this fits really well for this group, so...
Is it a play off of the great Felix Mendelssohn?
Yes.
Absolutely. Clarinet trios are not common. William, why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, it's such a beautiful orchestral instrument, and we hear those in so much great repertoire in that, and I think it's delightful when it's brought to the forefront and can really be showcased in a small chamber ensemble. So these composers who have done that, I think, they've really made a mark on classical music in those kind of pieces. And it's a beautiful combination of sounds. We love to perform, the three of us.
So. I love this trio, too. I love this combination of sounds. Mm-hmm. I was so excited to have this type of sound on the air, this sound on the air for Backstage mm-hmm. Pass. Yeah. How much music really is out there for a clarinet trio, Armenio?
There is actually quite a bit. You have, of course, the Romantic composers who wrote extensively for clarinet, and even contemporary composers are taking great interest in this combination, sometimes utilizing violin or viola instead of a cello. But the trio formation with clarinet, piano, and a string instrument is becoming more and more prevalent.
Have you commissioned anything? Are you thinking about commissioning things?
We have not commissioned it yet, but we are considering it very seriously.
What about arrangements? You're all musicians. You probably know how to do that. William, is it possible to take something and turn it into the perfect piece for your group?
Oh, absolutely. I write my own solo piano arrangements, and I love that art form. I love that creativity. And I truly believe, yeah, there's flexibility in a kind of group ensemble like this. And so, yes, one can come up with amazing works like that. And I also, too, like the versatility, the being able to interchange instruments that you can have with the certain timbres fit together so well. And there is that sort of flexibility. So,
would you take a piece that was written, for example, piano, mm-hmm. clarinet, and cello, or clarinet, piano, and viola, mm-hmm. and rework it for cello?
Well, yes, absolutely. And even a piece we're going to play today, which is a clarinet and cello and piano, can be for violin, bassoon, and piano, too. So
we're going to hear a couple of pieces from Brahms, a couple of movements of Brahms, a lovely work, Armenio, that was sort of a return to writing for him.
Indeed. In reality, he was done. He had already hung his boots, so to speak. had not written anything for more than a year, had just finished out writing his own final will. So this is a man packing his bags, and suddenly there comes Richard Mühlfeld, the principal clarinetist with the Meiningen Orchestra, and everything changes. He gets a fresh, new burst of inspiration, and voila, Opus 114 and Opus 115.
So we listened to the piece that inspired Brahms to come out of retirement, playing that charming and beautiful clarinet part, is Armenio Susanna, the pianist, William Nubro, Rintaro Wada, the cellist, the Felix Ensemble on Backstage Pass.
Thank you.
The first movement of Brahms' Trio in A Minor, Opus 114, with the Felix Ensemble on Backstage Pass. Lovely work, and we will be listening to the fourth movement right after we spend a little bit of time with our Dean of Music here, Dr. Armenio Susano, the clarinetist, and you also play the sax, too. So these are really flexible instruments. Do you do jazz when you're playing these instruments as well?
A little bit, yes. A little bit? Depending on the environment, the concert, the people around me. Yes, a little bit of everything.
Is that a hard crossover, classical to jazz?
Not if you have spent enough time speaking the idiom. As long as you're able to acclimate yourself to the environment, to the language, the swing, you're able to communicate quite effectively. Some people, and they do, may still detect a certain classical accent in my jazz playing. But as I said, I feel like you can communicate quite proficiently, regardless of the environment or language you're operating in.
You were kind of a wunderkind with the clarinet. 16 years old.
It's been a while.
Yeah, you were 16 when you nailed down a job at the Rio de Janeiro Opera House Symphony.
That is correct.
Well, that must have been extraordinary, 16-year-old walking onto the stage with all those other people.
It was life-changing, and I remember still coming into my very first rehearsal with the Opera House Symphony wearing shorts. At the time, that was never forbidden, but it was definitely frowned upon. You show up wearing slacks for the rehearsals, you don't come in shorts. Of course, I had the excuse that I just came from the beach, so plus I was young, so they looked at me favorably and just told me, you know, it's better to wear slacks to rehearsals.
Someone took you aside and clued you in. Why the clarinet? What was it about that instrument that...
The clarinet attracted me from the very beginning, Julie, because the sound, the expressiveness of the sound. I remember coming down as a young 8-year-old buck coming down from a choral rehearsal on a Saturday morning at the School of Music in Brasilia, the capital of Brazil. And I come down at the bottom of the stairs, and there's this individual who was a few years ahead of me in the program playing. And he was playing these beautiful scales up and down and up and down, probably exercising some close exercise at the time. And I just stopped and I looked at him, and he looked at me and said, "What's up, kid?" And I said, "What is this that you're playing?" And he said, "This is the clarinet." And I said, "Okay, thanks." And I walked away, and the next year I had to choose a principal instrument to study, and that was it. That was the beginning of a lifelong love affair.
It doesn't always work that way, do you think? It's the instrument just speaks to somebody?
In my case, it did. I could literally hear it calling my name through those scales, and I fell in love. It was love at first C major scale. And from that point on, I would say most people are attracted to instruments for one reason or another, but it all comes from a personal perspective and some type of connection between the person and the instrument.
So we hear that connection made now. The Felix Trio is joining us today on Backstage Pass, and this is the fourth movement of Brahms' Trio in A Minor, Opus 114. You're listening to Classical 91.5.
Thank you.
The fourth movement of Brahms' Trio in A Minor with the Felix Ensemble playing here on Classical 91.5. I'm Julia Figueres, and this is Backstage Pass. William Newbrow, welcome back to our studios. I mentioned you were here earlier. Now, were you, like Armenio, was it love at first note for piano?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. I started at the age of 8, which in the piano world is quite late, actually, because we have 3 and 4, you know. But my first piano lessons were on organ. My mother felt I needed something beyond my schooling, which I enjoyed so much, but something extra. And I did not think at first comment that the, you know, piano would be really my thing. I took lessons on organ, but it quickly came. My love for it, the progress, the enjoyment. I knew that was my path. And so that's...
And it worked out for you. So you really got to study with some of the great pianists of all time, Leon Fleischer, Gilbert Kalisch. What lessons did they give you that you are now able to give your students at Houghton?
That's a tremendous question. And they really instilled in me a passion for the faithfulness to the score, really for listening to a very high level. What is timing in music? What is that slight split second? What does that mean in music? And so as I'm passing on, you know, these concepts, these time-proven traditions to my students, you know, I'm really trying to get them to listen to that kind of depth, to really think about what makes music work, what are the composer's intentions in there, and how can we faithfully bring that to our wonderful audiences, so...
You have taken part in a lot of competitions. You've won a lot of competitions as well. Do your students compete?
Yes, I do have them actively teaching even, performing, competitions, you name it. It's a wonderful to get them off campus and to perform. I encourage that as much as possible, in addition to all of their on-campus performances.
So what are the upsides of a competition?
Ooh, it's first of all, assembling a good program. In the piano world, of course, we memorize most everything. So being able to really bring together a good combination of pieces to memorize it solidly and to really sit with the music, to really get to know it in a special way. And I think really competitions, for all that goes with them, really are an opportunity for one to play to an extent to one can imagine. And some of the best performances are in those occasions.
So what are the downsides of competitions?
Oh, well, I mean, first of all, just being willing to... It's a risk. It's a risk like anything. And I mean, it's a good risk to take because not having one submit oneself to that risk, you're going to not have the opportunity. And there's actually a saying I saw once that said, try and you might, don't and you won't. So that's also a good way to think about it. But I think, yeah, that's competitions are, they come with all kinds of things, but they help us to really become better musicians, better people. And so
there's a conversation that has been going on for quite some time about memorizing things. Mm-hmm. And some people say that memorization is not necessarily a thing. It doesn't have to happen. Others say memorization really should happen. So where do you stand in that conversation?
I am currently working on Rachmaninoff's second piano concerto, which I'm going to be performing this coming spring. And for me, knowing a piece intrinsically, harmonically, I do full harmonic analysis, and memory for me is so vastly important to be able to really know the piece and to deliver it unimpeded to the audience.
We're about to play some Beethoven, and this, William, this is kind of multi-purpose Beethoven.
Yes, it is. Yes, this it's called the Gassenhauer Trio, and this wonderful work by Beethoven. He was only 27 when he wrote this in 1797, and it just shows so much of not only his compositional prowess, but his real ability to have humor and fun in music. And the last movement, which is Pria Ch'io L'Impegno, it means before I go to work or before I commit to something. And it's a tune that anyone could sing or whistle on that day. So it was a wonderful set of variations on that tune, which you'll hear.
So let's commit to that, shall we? Here is Beethoven's Trio in B-flat, Opus 11, played for us on Backstage Pass by the Felix Ensemble. Thank you.
Thank you.
Beethoven at his most sprightly, his trio in B-flat, Opus 11, played for us today on Backstage Pass by the Felix Ensemble. We are live from the Henry Epstein studio, and I'd like to take a moment to chat with our cellist, Rintaro Wada. Rintaro, the last time you were here was about just over 3 years ago, and you were playing a duo with your daughter, Carino, a violinist. Is she still playing violin?
Yes, she does. She went to the Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois, and this is the second year for her. So I don't hear anything from her, though.
Of course not. Of course not. She vanishes off to college, and, you know, that's the end. And your wife plays piano, right?
Yes, she does.
So you kind of have a noisy house.
That's the reason I'm here in the States. I was in Japan, but I thought it would be difficult to find an apartment in Tokyo.
Oh, sure, because nobody wants to hear that. So you come to the States and make all the noise you want. You went to Eastman School of Music.
Just for the graduate school, the master's degree.
So who did you study with there?
I first studied with Marcy Rosen. She's a cellist of the Mendelssohn String Quartet. And the second year, she left, and Mr. Harris, the Alan Harris, came from Cleveland. And I finished with him, studied with him.
What was it about the Cleveland or about the Eastman School of Music that you chose? Why did you decide to get your master's here?
Well, I didn't know anything about the schools in the States, but my teacher in Japan, she studied with the Starker, Janosch Starker, in Illinois. And so he came to the States and stayed in the States for, I think, 17 years. So he knew about the schools really well. He taught in Temple University, too. So,
how old were you when you started playing the cello?
When I was 10 years old.
So you didn't start with the cello?
My mother is a pianist, so like she taught me piano when I was younger. And originally, I was thinking, actually, clarinet. to study, but my mother took me to the cello lesson, like surprise.
And yeah, big surprise from clarinet to cello, so Armenio, you can breathe easier. He's not picking up your instrument. The cello's a huge instrument, so you have to be slightly older to really get the full-size thing, right?
Right. I think when I was sixth grade or so, I switched to the full-size. Could be seventh grade.
Well, we're glad you're here today. We're going to go back to music because we have one last piece of music to listen to. And it's going to be that bit of Brazil I warned you about. And I also hear there will be bongos. On Classical 91.5, this is Backstage Pass. And we'll be listening to Valdir Azevedo's Brasileirinho on WXXI. Thank you. Brasileirinho on Classical 91.5. Alger Azevedo wrote it. The Felix Ensemble performed it because we just don't have enough cowbell in classical music. That was great fun. Armenio, let's talk about your school, shall we? Because you're not just a professor at the Houghton School, Great Batch School of Music, the Houghton College Great Batch School of Music. You're the dean. You're the man. So, first of all, what brought you to Houghton?
What brought me to Houghton was a good friend of mine, Stephen Plate, who was the dean before me. And he knew for about a year and a half that I was trying to find my way to the Buffalo area because two of my sons live in Buffalo with their wives. And I was in Virginia at the time, way too far away from my sons. And I talked to him about a year and a half before. And I just said, is there anything? Do you have any positions available? And said, no, nothing at this time. And a year and a half passed. And then suddenly he sends me an email saying, hey, would you like to teach music history for us? And I said, absolutely, we'd love to. So he brought me in, interviewed me with the faculty, with the committee, the search committee, offered me the position. And that was 6 years ago. And here we are.
And here you are indeed. And what brought you to Houghton, William?
Yes, at the time I was busy with international piano competitions, and in addition to performing, I always loved teaching, and so really it was kind of a nationwide, even a international search to really find where I wanted to teach, and on a very long list of places I applied to, Houghton College came up, and I came for the interview and knew right away this was the place for me, and have loved it so much. 18 years I've been teaching at that wonderful college.
That's lovely. Now, Rintaro, you don't just teach at Houghton. You have three different places you teach.
Right. I teach in public school in Olean High School. That's my main job. And part-time, I come to Houghton and Alfred University.
So is that difficult to balance how you teach a high schooler and how you teach a college student?
Not really. Yeah, I enjoy both.
So what do you do with your high school kids, looking at your high school kids and how you're teaching your college kids? Are you able to bring some of those college techniques to your high school students?
Yes, the fundamental thing is the same. So I can apply to even fourth grade teaching and the college students teaching myself.
That's a lot of travel, too. You're driving around a lot.
It's true.
So what do you look for in a student who is going to come to Houghton College and audition? What do you want? What is your ideal student, Armenio?
I would say we are looking for students who have a passion for music, students who want to broaden their horizons. But I would say most importantly, we are looking for students who are flexible and malleable, who are not stuck in one particular perspective. Music, as you could see here today and as we see every day in life, music is so multifaceted. You have great music, you have incredible art in all types of shapes and forms, colors and rhythms, fast music, slow music, music with great ensembles, music with small ensembles. So we're looking for students who are open to all that music has to experience. And those students can come and become conductors at Houghton College, or they can come and become opera singers, they can become music producers, they can become recording artists, they can become school professors or college professors. So we're looking for those students who have primarily a passion for music in whatever shape music may take form.
William, you're the director of the piano studies, mm-hmm. So I assume you're the man who listens to every single audition as it happens.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, so same question. Mm-hmm. When these pianists come mm-hmm. in, and there's an awful lot of pianists mm-hmm. who come in and sit down and audition for you,
yes.
What makes one special?
Yes, I mean, when you go beyond just the whole notion of fundamental training, of correct playing, we're really looking for someone who is a thinker, someone who really has an idea and can really bring that across in a passionate way, someone who is very conscientious of themselves as a musician and what they can bring across in the music. And so We work with all levels of talent and ability, but for someone, for me, and it's most important, someone who wants to do it, who can't imagine themselves doing something else, who has that drive, that passion, and we can make things happen then. And we can, it's tremendous, the rate of progress that we see in our students. So,
so we have brilliant schools represented here. We have the Eastman School of Music, we have Michigan, we have Peabody, all represented in this room. What makes the Great Batch School of Music special?
Well, that's a great question, Julie. And I would have to say the faculty who are there and the students who choose to be there. The combination of our faculty, all of them world-class musicians, and their desire to take personal interest in the formation of those students, not only musically, but also in terms of their life. When students are absent and for any reason they miss work, we are contacting them. Students are not stalked by faculty in any way, shape, or form, but faculty take a very personal interest in the advancement of students, how they are progressing, how they are learning not only the music, but how they are learning to deal with the various aspects of being an adult and pre-professional musician. And we end up with individuals like our lovely Paige Turner here today, who is one of our students. Her name is Hannah Haas. And she embodies the type of students that we're looking for.
I want to thank you all for coming in and playing for us today for Backstage Pass. Our executive director and producer and director is Gene Fisher. Our audio technician is Andrew Croucher with help from Robert Braden. As mentioned, our Paige Turner is Hannah Haas. And many thanks again to the Felix Ensemble, Dr. Armenio Susano Jr., Dr. William J. Nubro, and Rintaro Wada. I'm your producer and host, Julia Figueres. Backstage Pass is made possible in part by a gift from Drs. Dawn and Jack Lipson to support performance, innovation, and accessibility of the arts in the Rochester community. This is a production of WXXI Public Broadcasting.
This is Classical 91.5 and 90.3.